This is Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. Up next, an old play that's even more relevant today. An off-Broadway production of the play Galileo, Bertolt Brecht, just opened here in New York. It stars F. Murray Abraham in the title role. Brecht wrote the play in 1938. That's more than 70 years ago. I saw the play this week, and I'm no theater critic, but the message and the theme of the play about a Renaissance-era astronomer written by a Cold War-era playwright feels like it could have been written last week. History, as they say, has a way of repeating itself. Society is still grappling over the role of science and truth and scientists who challenge the status quo. You can swap out astronomer for climate scientist in the Galileo story, and you get the picture. And that's one of the reasons why my next guest chose to stage a new production of Galileo. Brian Kulik joins me here in our studio. He's the artistic director of the Classic Stage Company and director of Galileo. He's also associate professor at Columbia University School of the Arts. Welcome to Science Friday.
Oh, thank you. So nice to be here.
Thank you. Also with me is actor Robert Dorfman. He plays Cardinal Barberini and the Pope in the play.
That's right. Good to be Pope.
Nice Jewish boy like you, as you said in the
talk.
Thank
you, sir.
getting to play the Pope. It must have been interesting for you.
Fabulous, really.
Let me ask you, is this, when you decided to stage the play, was the political climate about science about the same as it was? And was that one of the reasons why you decided on?
Well, I've been very curious about this issue of truth. And it's interesting to hear Mr. Mann talk about truth versus fact and these sorts of issues. But one of the questions for us was, you know, how does a truth and an inconvenient truth like the sun revolving around the Earth, revolving around the sun, mm-hmm. or the inconvenient truth of global warming. How does that truth move through the world? So I was curious because Galileo is one of those great, extraordinary moments where he has a very inconvenient truth to tell. How does it get told? How does it get stopped? What mm-hmm. do we have to do? One of the characters in the play says, "Don't you think the truth, even if it is the truth, would get by without us?" And Galileo says, "No, no, no. As much truth as we push through gets through." And so for me today, one of the big questions is global warming and how do you keep pushing that truth along? So that was one of the reasons of starting to investigate mm-hmm. the play.
Mm-hmm. Robert, how much did you have to study about? You played the cardinal and the pope, and
that's
a lot
right.
of other parts in that play. Everybody played a bunch of parts in that play.
Well, you want to study the play and you want to study the subject. A few years ago, I did a play by a prolific young playwright, Itamar Moses, called Outrage, where I actually played Bertolt Brecht writing this play. So I did a lot of research on Brecht himself in those days, Eric Bentley, all that reading. So this time I had remnants of that knowledge. I really studied the period and the cardinal pope himself.
What's interesting about Brecht writing, his words are so – he himself must have really studied the scientific method because the wording he uses shows he really did know what he was talking about.
Yeah. I mean, to my ear, my unscientific ear, it certainly seems that way. But I think he was probably talking as much about his relationship to the science of his day as a parallel universe to Galileo's. I mean, the atomic bomb was upon us.
Mm-hmm. Tell us a bit about the set. Is fantastic set. It's a theater in the round, and there are these wonderful planets that hang down from the ceiling.
Well, we're very fortunate to have Adrienne LaBelle, who's an extraordinary designer, probably best known for her work in opera with Peter Sellers, Nixon in China, projects like that, and also Dr. Atomic about Oppenheimer. When Adrienne and I got together and she sat in the space, she said to me, the first thing she said, "Do you remember when being in like third or fourth grade and everything stopped in the classroom and everyone made a solar system out of paper mache?" And she said, "I want to do that at CSC. I want to turn your theater into a solar system." And she showed me the next day these sort of large orbs that she wanted to make and suspend and have rotate and move about in the space. And it was such a beautiful and such a simple, elegant idea to sort of hang these massive spheres that could then be used as Galileo's talking. It just seemed to it just felt like it evoked the right spirit of the piece.
And it's a very intimate play, and the Robert and the actors move around. They get very close to the audience.
That's right. It's like the Milky Way, you know. The audience seems sort of like a foggy lit mass, but every once in a while a face pops out like a star and tells you how you're doing.
Are you aware? You're obviously aware.
Because the light spills. It's a three-sided theater. It's a beautiful space to play classic stage. So the audience is very – the audience members are very much a part of it.
Yeah, and as Mr. Abraham said that night when he – during the talk back, he said every audience has been different.
Yes.
And you're almost afraid to laugh at the punch. You know there's a joke line there. Uh-huh. But the topic is so serious.
That's right, and thoughtful. Yeah.
And thoughtful. You know, it's purposely, I imagine, written to sort of break the mood a little bit, right?
Yeah.
But you're almost afraid to laugh at the joke line.
That's interesting. Well, Brecht, you know, was a big believer in not only getting a message across, but getting it across in an entertaining, engaging fashion. So, you know, he'll do anything to get a point made. And one of the best ways to make a point is through a joke. And so there are quite a few good ones in the piece.
Okay. Got it. And are you aware when the joke goes flat, when this audience doesn't say a thing, when they should be laughing?
In a word, yes.
You know, the interesting thing is you never know what an audience response is until the very end. And sometimes we did Cherry Orchard just recently, and a wonderful actor, Alvin Epstein, said one night, it was so quiet, that not a laugh to be had. He said, he came backstage, he said, what a nice people CSC is. They didn't have time to get an audience, so they painted an audience. So we would at least think there was somebody there.
Yeah, we have some on our SciArt site, at sciencefriday.com. If you go to our science site, we have a whole site dedicated. We have some pictures of the stage on there that people can see the set. We were doing a little research and Googling around, and there was a Yahoo post. It must have been written by a student working on a term paper, because it said, help, is Galileo a hero or not? Is he a hero or is he not a hero? Because that's what the play's all about, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. The retelling of the story is pretty heroic, but he himself would say he's not a hero.
Yeah, he did say that.
He's a great anti-hero. That's the case. Right.
And in the end, where his student tried to resurrect him as a hero, he said no.
That's right.
He was very vehement about I'm not a hero. And this play was translated by
Charles Laughton.
Charles Laughton.
That's right.
The famous British actor.
That's right. He was the original translator, working in concert with Bertolt Brecht himself in L.A. where the play was written.
And they, Brecht and Laughton had met, and he'd mentioned Galileo as a subject, and Laughton became very intrigued. And that's what sort of started that collaboration.
Yeah. Were there alternative endings?
There are. This is the most rewritten of Brecht's plays, and there are several endings. The one we are using is the 1947 American ending. There's a 1950 East German Berliner Ensemble ending, which is a little bit more upbeat, I think. But I think Brecht said sometimes you have to say no so loudly that the audience will scream back yes. And so his 1947 version is a pretty strong as a provocation to an audience.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I often think because he got out during the fascist regime that he felt a little guilt and he became a little more forgiving of those who were implicated.
Yeah.
Talking with Brian Kulik, who is here in the studio with us. He's artistic director of the Classic Stage Company and director of Galileo, which is in New York now, and also actor Robert Dorfman, who plays Cardinal Barberini and the Pope in the play. How long is it going to be running for?
Two more weeks.
So March 18th.
March 18th, and these things are too short, you know? As I said, we do a lot of the science and the arts theater, and we find out they're running 2 weeks, 3 weeks, a month, or something like that. And because Brecht is not staged very much in this country.
Not enough. And the interesting thing is, I think, a combination of Murray and also the play, but we sold out before the reviews even happened.
No kidding. How is that as an actor when you tackle a play like this that's been done so many times, you expect a certain amount of criticism and interpretation. It's not like this one. It's not like that one.
That's a great question. I think everybody has a very strong opinion about Brecht and how Brecht should be played. But I think one of the important things about Brecht is he always said about his theater that he called it we call it Brechtian theory, and he liked that. As opposed to there's another method of acting, which is called the Stanislavski method. The method seems to suggest that if you follow this recipe, your acting will come out just right. Brecht was a little allergic to the idea of methodology and was more interested in the idea of just certain theories and what they would provoke, and that as a theory, it's going to evolve, it's going to grow, it's going to change over time. And so what Brecht might have needed in the 40s, which is an idea of less emotion, coming from a world which might be too emotionalized. Mm-hmm. Maybe the problem today is there isn't enough emotion in the argument.
Right. You know? Let's go to the phones. Billy in Brooklyn. Hi, Billy.
Hi, how's it going?
Hi there. Go ahead.
I just had a quick question on how you came up with this production when I feel like the public is kind of disinterested in space and the cosmos. Especially with the death of NASA and such. I was wondering if you could speak on that.
Oh, sure. No, I mean, for me, this idea of a major figure like Galileo who was able to communicate a very difficult idea, an idea that didn't want to be consumed or absorbed at that period of time, was fascinating to me. And one of the questions that I had going in was, who are the Galileos today? Who are the Galileos now who can help us with all of these facts and help us find the language to continue to keep moving us forward? Because I agree with you. I do feel that we're sort of stuck in a sort of ideological gridlock. And how can science and how can the language of science be mobilized in such a way to help us move forward?
Of course, whenever you do something about science or you do something where you'd like to get a lot of attention, you need to find somebody of star power and who'll bring the audience in. And then before I go on, let me just remind everybody that this is Science Friday from NPR. Did you have to convince F. Murray Abraham a lot to come and do this play?
You know, no. That was one of the wonderful things is that we did. Robert and I and a couple other actors got together with Murray and we read it and we finished it and he said, "Let's do it." You know, it was that simple. It's a great role for him. Yeah, it fits him like a glove.
Yeah,
What's it like working with him?
He's a very skillful, talented actor on stage. He's always in the moment. He's unpredictable. And offstage, he's a very generous and good man, sweet man. He's tough, and it's been great.
Yeah, he's one of the last of the Mohicans. He's this rare breed of actor who is completely and totally emotionally committed from a moment-to-moment basis, and at the same time has tremendous technical skill that could go toe-to-toe with any English actor. Mm. You know, so it's this extraordinary combination of intuition and technique, joined in this man.
And he's particularly suited to this role. It's hard to know where Murray ends and Galileo begins.
And what was the toughest part for you in getting into this role?
Well, like you say, I'm a good Jewish boy from Brooklyn, by the way, bar mitzvahed, and I'm asked to play the Pope. And
I think all religious figures in this are played by Jewish actors.
As it should be. And to see the world through that prism of, the debate between religion and science has been going on and continues for a millennium. But there's legitimate points of view from both sides, and finding the Pope's point of view in this particular case, because he was a fan of Galileo's, but he had to come down against him.
Yeah, it's an interesting, very interesting scene where you're donning the Pope's garb, and slowly, as you don the garb, you're going from more of a liberal to a more conservative viewpoint. In a matter of moments.
Yeah, Pope Urban was a great egoist and a prolific spender, and he believed in nepotism, but he was also liberal. He believed, he wanted to believe and support Galileo's findings, but there was an awful lot of pressure from the outside, the more conservative base, if you will, to hold the reins on Galileo.
And the other interesting thing, which doesn't get developed in the play, is how deeply religious Galileo was. That even though he was putting forth these ideas, he still deeply believed. It was only under his breath during the Inquisition, when they got to the point where they wanted him to recant, he sort of said under his breath, And yet it moves.
I was expecting that to happen in the play at some part. But it doesn't. It didn't get to that part.
Yeah, Brecht is very wily in the second half of the play. I always feel like the plays, he starts it almost in a way to get an MGM movie. You know, here's this guy. he's exiled. He's in Hollywood. He's working with Lawton. This will be his chance to get Louis
pitch.
B. Mayer.
The pitch.
Yeah, and the first act almost functions like a great MGM biopic. But Brecht can't help being Brecht. So as he writes the second half, he starts to just play with the audience. So the scenes that you think you should see, like the great trial scene, you don't see. You see his workers waiting for to hear the news. And so he keeps shifting the point of view to show you from a 360-degree vision of who Galileo is, from people like as high as the Pope to a street vendor on a corner. So he subverts himself. He subverts the piece in that respect.
Mm-hmm. And there's a dance in the play. Was that original?
There is an infamous, famous musical number,
right?
Which I think over the course of the productions, several choreographers have been fired. Famous choreographers. It's notorious. It's one of the hardest sequences to make work.
Well, it worked in this play. I highly recommend if you got it. And it's on for another few weeks. So if you're in the New York area and go to Classic Stage Company, you can go to our website at sciencefriday.com and see some scenes, a couple of scenes from there. And it's rare to see this play produced, and it's done so very well by you folks. So
thank you.
Congratulations.
Well, thank you.
Brian Kulik is the artistic director of the Classic Stage Company and the director of Galileo. Robert Dorfman plays Cardinal Berberini and the Pope in the play, and it's a great play to see. Thanks for coming in today.
Well, thank you so much.
Our program's senior producer is Annette Heist. Charles Berquist is our director. Flora Lichtman is our multimedia editor. Our producers are Christopher Taliata, Namisha Serene Anand, and Luis Quevedo. Sam Flato is our production assistant. Neil Rauch is our technical director at the controls here in New York. And if you missed any part of our program or others, go over to iTunes, subscribe to our podcasts, both audio and video. And we want you to come watch us and sit in our audience. We're going to be broadcasting from Washington, D.C. in 2 weeks. So come on out and see us. We'll be at the National Geographic Society on March 16th. Tickets are free. So we're first come, first serve. Doors open at 1:30 p.m. And you can get more info, including the address, at our website at sciencefriday.com. And you can learn more all about it on our website. I'm Ira Flato in New York.